mouths the numbers along with it. It's truly sad. As an adult, you should be able to read without also using your... Never mind. You've got a guy that you know about 7 feet tall, probably reads. Yeah.
Gotta sound it out.
Yeah.
You know.
So I guess we'll start with an introduction. So wait a minute. Let me do it the right way. Welcome back, family. This is another episode of View from the Stoop, but this time we're doing it a little bit different. You might have heard him mentioned in other podcasts as being out in the hinterlands of Croatia, but he's returned to the States. He's one of my favorite people in the world. This is, you know what? I'm not even, you do it. Introduce yourself.
Mr. Peace, I appreciate it. Thank you. Thank you for having it. And the feeling is reciprocated. Absolutely. You're one of my favorites, man. Yes. Good people. My name is Sam Johannes. I'm a native Washingtonian from Washington, D.C.
The real Washington, D.C.
The pre-gentrification Washington, D.C. I've been here my entire life. I met Kai at work. We share a lot of interests. We share a lot of musical interests. We share a lot of cultural interests. And he's a good conversationalist. And so I've been angling to get on the Stoop for a while now, and finally have succeeded after a brief trip out to the Balkans.
We both yearned for a day when four wings, mumble sauce, and some fries was all you heard when you went to the carryout, or, and this may be offensive, but it's a DC thing, or the Chinaman.
You know what, Kai? You could go ahead and say that. I'm going to stay away from that one. But you're absolutely right, man. I miss when it was kind of a hectic situation on H Street.
Yeah.
You know, when there was an just kind of a different element of the unknown and the unexpected. You know, rather than I don't know, Kitsuin or whatever.
Back when you know, go-go was heard everywhere instead of, you know, in small pockets. Go-Go's is a music from D.C., and we'll get into that in a whole other pod when we talk about how the city's changed. But what we want to do today is talk about, I guess, what everybody's talking about. Well, prior to today, because today another album came out. But last weekend, Kanye West dropped Donda after, 2 months of making us wait in anticipation, which I think is a money grab. I think it was a way to make some money. I mean, he's having concerts. He's teasing people with an album that may never come out.
And I wouldn't put it past this individual to have that have been a conscious approach to something. And if it was, let me put it this way. I hope it was, because if it was, it was genius. Yeah. And if it wasn't, then it's sad to see. But what are you gonna
so do? I'm not bearing the lead. Donda is an album of pure mid. Like, it is literally the most mediocre of albums that I've heard in some time. I'd almost like it better if it was bad.
Yeah, because it would be a departure from the expectations. I agree with you. It is a mid-tier, a little asterisk on that. It is a mid-tier Kanye West album. I think you could cut out like 13 tracks off of Donda and still have a solid ass project. I mean, the best songs on there are still better than a lot of people's best songs. So that I will. You know, couch my judgment on that. But yeah, no, the mid-tier, dude, mid-tier.
So I got into my writer bag while I was listening to the album, and I thought to myself, if I was going to write a review, if I was going to put up a blog post about Donda, and I needed to sum up the entire thing in a few sentences to get people hooked, and I wrote it down because I said, you know, I'm going to give this to Sam, and I want to hear what he thinks. So listening to Donda is orally as start and stop as the will he, won't he rollout of the highly anticipated album via a series of listening parties, in parentheses, equal parts Sonic Lab concert and bizarre traveling mindscape. That would be how I would explain Donda to people.
That is good. And I think we'll probably end up talking a little bit about this later, but the most noteworthy thing about this is all the stuff around the actual music itself. The stem device that he's selling for like $200 that people are, which is crazy, by the way.
I mean, but, shout out to entrepreneurship.
For real. No, for real. Like, I'm not mad at it. I'm not mad at it. Ye is, he is an innovator. But all this stuff, and the listening parties, doing the listening parties the way that he's doing, like, that is actually exciting to me. The quality, if I'm a grumpy old man who, like, only listens to CDs or only listens to whatever, and is just sitting in a room by myself, judging this music as it comes through my ear holes, you know, independent of anything else, then I'm more mad at this than anything else. But, like, with all the other elements of his rollout, like, there's things for us to learn. There's things that the music industry will undoubtedly adopt from Kanye and grow. Like, the whole notion that he's giving his listeners, like, the ability to kind of customize sonically how they consume this, that's a big thing. It's part of the and you and I have talked about this before, the larger trend of art and artists making their product more and more, like, interactive, you know. People don't want to just get the song. Mm-hmm. They want to see the process. You know, they want to get all the clips from the studio as it's going in. You know, they want to know, like, what the whole behind the scene, the sausage making process is like. And so then it only makes sense that if that's the trend, that then the next step is, once it's, in quotes, you know, finished, the finished product, that then there's still opportunities for customization and sort of, like, personalized consumption moving forward. So that's cool.
Now, I guess we've said it's mid. I want to take a step back and say, like, I think Kanye West may be the best hip-hop producer of his generation in maybe the last 30 years. Or at least the best curator of producers in the last 30 years. And that's a whole other conversation.
I thank you for qualifying. I agree with that.
So yeah. I don't think I could ever give a Kanye album a 1 out of 5, because his production is just, it all automatically moves it out of bad territory. But I will say that one thing I heard on this album that was crazy disappointing to me was how out of shape he sounded. He, you know, there are some rappers you don't invite to your session because they're going to take your song from
you. Because they're washy. Right?
But you shouldn't be, like, the guest feature on every single one of your songs. Like, every time you have somebody else on your song, it's either just bad, looking at, you know, Tell Me the Vision, I'm sorry, you know, rest in peace, Pop Smoke, but we should have put that to the side. But you shouldn't be the dude who everyone's wondering, how did he get on the track?
Right. It's like the Kanye features that we, or the, in quote, features, right, the features on his own album, the Kanye bits of this wasn't like Kanye giving a dope verse on Overnight Celebrity or something like that. It's like, oh, let Kanye do his like weird auto-tune gospel, but not actually gospel sing because he doesn't have any singing chops. Shit. And yeah, and he added that, like, that was the common element that he added to everything, which is just not the way to
go. I mean, I think we also have learned this year, don't invite Lil Baby to your sessions. He's now moved into that realm of rap, whoever.
Doesn't miss, bro. Yeah. He does not miss.
Quick departure. I thought Gunna was going to be the one that was going to break out. And clearly I was wrong, because Lil Baby said, hold my beer. And he's gone forward every single opportunity he's got. I mean, he almost lost J. Cole on his own song. And that's hard to do.
Okay. Yes, I was just listening to that song yesterday, bro. And so this is an interesting point tying it back to Kanye. Kanye has picked these guys, these young guys, right? And he tried, and he, like, does a little bit of their flow and stuff like that, like, matches their sound a little.
No, he doesn't.
Like, tries to do it, right? That's what he's trying to do, but doesn't actually do it. Doesn't do it successfully. He ends up sounding like a cheap knockoff of whatever, you know, flow or approach he's trying to emulate. Whereas Cole on Pressure, he actually does the baby flow, but everybody knows it's Cole. It's Cole still spitting with his, you know, his rap.
And then he made the mistake of letting Lil Baby come in where he wanted to instead of at a, it's your verse now. No. He let Lil Baby come in with the perfect, like,
cut right now, right up them back. Right. Oh my God.
Yeah, I must have listened to it at least 5 times before I let the verse continue, because why would you let someone come in? Like, it's like when you hear Eminem on Renegade. Jay, why would you let him? He produced it. You gave him the perfect time to come in, and he washed you. So be it.
See, Nas didn't make that mistake with M1 EPMD. That one felt a little forced. Right. At least the double time part where he's like talking about, you know, I hit up 50 because I don't know what I'm doing. That shit found that could have been
cut. Honestly, it was my least favorite song on that album.
Yeah, I would say.
I think Rare is my favorite, but only because of the switch up right in the middle of the song. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. We're talking about the Nas album for anybody who has no idea what we're talking
about. Yeah, King's Disease 2. So you mentioned this to me before that you thought Lauren, my favorite song on that whole thing.
I went back and listened to it again.
Song with Lauren.
I went back and listened to it again. I was incorrect. I apologize to Miss Lauryn Hill. You still have the chops. You're still one of the greatest.
Yes.
No matter what Nicki Minaj or Meg Thee Stallion or whoever else says, there are some women out there who put in work in the 90s, in the late 80s. Who are above the current crop, and we need to pay them homage.
Absolutely, and I think people forget about that because so after Nicki Minaj, there was the same sort of thing with like Wayne. Mm. After those people, there was a generation of imitators. Like there was no rapper who was a woman who did not have some bit of Nicki Minaj's presentation in it,
right.
Like in some, even if lyrically they're entirely different, like Armani Caesar is one of these.
Okay. Ones. Yeah.
But Lauren didn't have, there was no generation of Lauren imitators.
And hasn't been since. I mean, like
right.
It is a unique sound style and probably will not come close to.
The Rhapsody is the only person I think of who comes close.
And but Rhapsody is like in a,
can't sing.
No,
like,
no, no.
Like, that's
Rhapsody. I'll say it like this: Rhapsody's rhymes are as good and possibly better, but in a different direction. It'd be like if I had a Maserati and you pulled up in a G-Wagon, and they're both expensive cars that do really good things, but they're not the same thing.
Yeah, no. I'm not calling
Rhapsody a G-Wagon. I just realized how that sounded. She's an upstanding young woman.
Yes, she is, dude. Absolutely. Yeah.
But I think Nicki Minaj is like, she's earned her spot on whatever Mount Rushmore we're talking about. And I don't think that anyone in that generation of female rappers will come close to what she's done. But I can't say that, you know, if I put her and the Brat in the same room and gave them 16 bars, that she's going to outdo the Brat or Eve or, you know, MC Light or just a list of people.
Yeah, no, undoubtedly. And this is why, you know, when we have these Mount Rushmore conversations, defining the criteria is so important. Because if you put the Brat or Gangsta Boo or somebody like that in an arena, in a random place in the world, they're not going to rock the crowd like Nicki Minaj. Absolutely,
no, she's got huge hits, huge.
Yeah, exactly, anthemic. Yeah. Anthemic.
But if I said, "Hey, there's a gun to your head, impress this dude," I don't know if the Brat's not going to spit some rapid fire like Midwest, like flame.
Impress this dude who only talks like Mobb Deep interludes.
Right.
You know, right, exactly.
You know what? This actually brings us, and we're so far from the topic that I don't even know if we need to go back to Kanye. But I was talking to somebody recently who told me that Beyonce was the greatest entertainer of all time. And it stopped me in my tracks because A, huh? And B,
blasphemous.
Like, huh? I mean, I'll just throw one name out there, Michael Jackson. If we're just going to throw a name out.
Yeah, please. Come on. That's disrespectful.
But, Beyonce, according to this person, has the greatest stage shows in history. And I don't even know what... Michael Jackson? Like...
That's so offensive. I mean, that whoever's saying that doesn't have the... doesn't have the background knowledge for me to even dignify that with a response. And no
disrespect. Her stage shows are great.
No,
they're great.
Absolutely.
For Michael Jackson.
Well, but also entertainer of all time? Bro?
That's a huge list. I mean, not to get into like other bags that we've never... Frank Sinatra? I mean, y'all may feel like, oh, he's an old white dude. Nah, you need to like pay attention because he was putting in work.
Yeah, as an actor, too. Like, and that's the thing, man. Like, just I would not call I would not even consider Rihanna for this kind of, just because she was an actress right. in, I don't know, fucking
Ocean's, Ocean's 8, whatever. Yeah.
Yeah, and okay. Like, no, you need a couple right. like, actual films right. under your belt in order to be in the entertainer category. Yeah.
What? I mean, like, I was watching the Off the Wall documentary, and if you haven't ever watched a music doc, and I could only recommend a handful of them, the Off the Wall doc is in a phenomenal place to start, because it's literally about Michael Jackson, who's in this very fragile, like, I don't know my place in the world state, which is mind-boggling because we just know him as, like, Michael Jackson. But he's like,
right, yeah.
I was a kid singer. The record label doesn't believe in me. They're like, it's my first adult album. I don't know who to work with. I don't know my sound yet. I've done a little bit of writing with the Jacksons. I hope this works. And, like, he wanted to be in the movies, so... The Wiz is being produced then. They had to audition, and then they had to fight for him to be in The Wiz. And you're like, that's Michael Jackson.
Can you imagine, man?
And like,
can you imagine, bro?
And the director, Sidney Lumet, didn't understand, like, what the hype was. Because he thought he was, like, he's just some kid who's, it's over for him. No, he'll never make it as an adult, like, act.
He'll never be another rock.
Right. So, and then Sidney Lumet is, like, on the thing. He's like, yeah, after the first day and he sung, I was like, it's like, but Quincy Jones literally had to convince him to let Michael Jackson sing and dance in the movie because he didn't understand mm-hmm. what the hype was. Mm-hmm. Then when he went to the record label, like, I want Quincy to work on the album, they were like, nah, Quincy Jones, what has he ever done? Like, we're not going to let some jazz guy produce, you know, Off the Wall. And it's just an amazing doc.
Yeah, no, that documentary is a classic of the genre of music documentaries, right. Absolutely, and just in documentaries, period. Yeah. Because the thing I love it demonstrates to you how important it, like, how life changing it is when Quincy Jones touches your career. Right. Like, and maybe yeah. now getting back to Kanye, but like the role of a producer is not understood mm-hmm. by people. Really, and it's a vision. It's seeing things that aren't there. Or mm-hmm. people think of like. I don't Maybe this is blasphemous to say to some people. I don't know. It shouldn't be. DJ Khaled is not a producer.
No. Dude, he's got a great ear. He's a good curator of music.
Yes. Yes. But he sees, all he sees and puts together are things that are already there.
Yeah.
No. He's not, it's not a forward vision.
Yeah. I'm reminded of something Jay-Z said after he made American Gangster. And he was playing it for Diddy or Puffy or whatever he was called at that time. And he was like, yo, I want to produce your album. And Jay was like, man, I always was one of those people who were like, he's not a producer. Like, what does he do? And he said, just give me the album and I'll bring it back. And he brought it back. And he said, I'll never say Puffy's not a producer again, because I don't know what he did between then and here, but it sounded better. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't care if Puffy's not the dude moving the sliders, but when he walks into the room, Berry Gordy was probably a lot the same way. He did more production and understood a lot of that stuff. But his ear was what made him great, you know. That doesn't sound good enough. Here's what you should add.
Absolutely. And you had, I mean, on Motown, like, you had a core of writers, mm-hmm. like Lamont, Dazier, Holland, Stevie.
Smokey.
These people who wrote all the songs, mm-hmm. they wrote all the songs, and they had the talent right. and all this kind of, but they weren't. Barry Gordy saw the hit-making machine factory with, like, interchangeable parts that they couldn't see. They could all see good songs, and they could all write and perform good songs, but putting all that together.
Because, not to denigrate anybody's talent, if they could do what he did, they would have done it.
Yeah.
And so, as much mid as I will say this album, Donda, was bringing it back to that, I don't know who else could have made this high quality mid.
That's the best mid I've heard in my life. Right.
We're not mad that the album's bad. We're mad that the album's not great.
Yeah, well, and also to go back to seeing things that aren't there and like building something entirely new. I do give, like, you know, hats off to Kanye for actually going in a direction that is different. Mm. Like, it does sound, where he is aiming sonically is something that is different. Like, it's not, so the obvious comparison, right, is with Certified Lover Boy, right? Certified Lover Boy is just the next step of Drake album.
Right.
It's the same thing. And we love it. Right. And we love it. And the numbers bear out that, right. that what Drake puts out is good. It's good quality. Everybody loves it. But it's not like he's trying to manifest something that we don't have a blueprint for right. already. And so, you know, I kind of get points for like taking a creative risk.
And we were talking earlier and I said, you know, Drake is the iPhone of music. And by that, I mean, you know, when I bought my iPhone, it wasn't because I thought I was going to take over the world with it. It's because when I woke up in the morning, I wanted it to do the exact same thing as it did the day before and the day yeah, after right. that and the day after that and last for the next 7 years. Drake, I pick it up. It's like putting on a comforter. I don't need to really understand what's happening here. I'm sure he's telling me something about his life, but it sounds just like Views did. And that's all right for me today. You know?
Exactly. It's like, yeah, I was going to say, you could take over his past, like probably four albums, you could take the best tracks off of all mm-hmm. those and put it on his greatest hits. And it's just like, there would be no stylistic gaps.
I know he's going to sing to me a little bit. I know he's going to talk about the drama of his life. I may not understand it. Don't really care. It's sonically great. At some point in the album, he's going to remind me that he is actually a really good rapper. He's only going to do that once, maybe twice.
He's gonna talk about some getting carry out from some expensive right. Italian restaurant that I've never heard right. of before, but just sounds right. dope. Forty's gonna take a modern mm-hmm. sample, modern,
and then drown it, and yeah.
put it underwater exactly, and it's gonna be right. right. There's gonna be some sparse drums on there, and I'm gonna make a stank face when I listen.
Jay-Z will come through and remind us all that he's still got it. I mean,
exactly. Exactly. He's going to say cake six times in a row, and it doesn't even matter.
No, he's going to talk about things I have no frame of reference for. Some artwork that he's purchased that has once again labeled me a brokey. That's okay. It's okay.
Exactly. No, when I listen to it, I'm like, these are rich people problems. I can't relate, but it sounds like a cool problem to have, Jason.
Who got paint on my Basquiat?
Exactly.
Sure. Sounds horrible.
You gonna act like you can't feel my presence?
But yeah, man, like I don't have to finish listening to Certified Lover Boy because I know what's there and I'm happy with it. Right now I could give it a 3.5 out of 5 and it'd probably be accurate.
Absolutely. I have not, by full disclosure, I have not finished Certified Lover Boy. I probably won't. But yeah, I mean, I'm in the same place. I'm like, good job, Aubrey. Good Man. Job. You did it again.
I'm sure there'll be a song on the album that'll be a top 10 number one hit, and Drake will continue his decade long run of being at the top of the list.
And this actually touches on another thing that we were talking about pre-pod. This is, people don't look at this moment, the Certified Lover Boy moment, in a vacuum, right? Like, nobody's listening through it to judge the artistic merit of the project Certified Lover Boy. They're looking at the most interesting shit to people. The most interesting thing to people is how this moves along the plot of all the like longer story arcs that Drake as a person right. is involved in. They're looking for the sneak disses to Kanye. They're looking for all these things, right? And that's when you reach a certain level of success as an entertainer, and Drake absolutely is in the entertainer yeah. quality, yeah, or category. Once you reach a certain level, your life becomes the product.
Right.
He's not working on the product. The product is the drama of his life. And like the output is like part of that. You know?
I submit that the album doesn't even need to do well. It's just a way to move his brand forward. Drake's now in the brand category, and we don't.
Yeah,
like you know, Michael Jackson's last album was what, Blood on the Dance Floor, or some garbage. No, wait, there was something after that. I know I didn't enjoy it, but it hasn't tarnished my image of Michael Jackson in any way. People bring that album up, I frown and I put on Thriller. But he made this.
The Isley Brothers released a bunch of albums in like the mid 2000s. Like
Mission to Please, I had one. It was not great.
Right, exactly.
it was a thing that happened to me in my youth, and let's just move on.
But I'm still excited yeah. about Mr. Biggs. Man. You know,
right. You tell me Ernie Isley's about to play the guitar, I'm like, oh, let's get it. Let's hear
for
that.
Sure. Is he wearing the bandana that matches his ascot? Yeah, I hope so. But yeah, no, I mean, like Snoop is another example of the artist becoming a brand, right? I couldn't name any of the other than Snoop Lion. Yeah, man. Which might not have been the name of the album.
That was his name. Let's be honest, I never actually listened to the album. I was happy it came out.
I listened to that song you did with Eddie Murphy, Red Light, yeah. Just because I wanted to hear Eddie Murphy sing a reggae song. But I couldn't name any of the albums he's released after Blue Carpentry.
And you know what? And still a legend. Still a legend.
Doesn't matter. I still watch his talk show, his YouTube show. I watch him, commentate the Olympics. It doesn't matter. And Drake is getting to the point. Drake is now Drake is a brand. Yeah. Right? Drake doesn't have to sell any more music to be a brand. He just has to sell.
It'd be like if The Rock put out an album. I personally don't want to hear it. I assume it's somewhere in the, it's a three. It's just a three because he's The Rock. I'm sure some label will put enough money into it to get it polished up and off it goes. He can't fail. Drake can't fail. Even Kanye, with his as much disdain as I have for this album, he can't fail. He can't. No. I mean, he's done everything possible to try and fail at this point. It's just not going to happen.
Bro, he broke with a decidedly middle of the pack album for him. He broke the Apple Music streaming record. Like, he's doing it. Like, and okay, so maybe the joke is on us because here we are talking about how mid this album is. But he won. He put numbers on the
board. I definitely spent 2 hours on a Saturday morning listening to Donda.
I did. Yeah,
and was upset from moment one. And still sat through to moment 148, praying there was gems in there. And I think, there are gems. And we should be honest, it's not a bad album. I mean, no. I think I counted, for me, five out of fives. The one with Lauryn Hill, the Lauryn Hill sample, 5 out of 5. Conway the Machine showed up. I gave that, a 4 out of 5.
Love that track. Love that track.
I mean, what's Conway talking about? Because it's not God. It's a very weird song for him to be on.
Also, it sounds like he cut Conway's verse short at the end, or cut out a middle part, and then he. I don't know, but there was definitely more bars from Conway that were recorded.
Jay Alec, an avowed Muslim, on a song called "Jesus Is Lord" or something like that, or Jesus is, what's it called? Jesus Is Alive or something. Okay. Welcome Jay Elect to something you don't believe in, but all right.
Bro, Jay Electronica is just an enigma to me, man. Like, okay, let me preface this by saying I think Jay Electronica is one of the greatest lyricists, that is currently still.
There are times, though, where I'm like, what the hell is he talking about?
This and so we were talking this, and this might be way out of the field for some of your regular listeners, but we were talking about battle earlier, and Daylight is one of my favorite rappers, not even just battle rappers, one of my favorite wordsmiths of all time. But there are times when he's saying stuff that's like, this is gibberish to everybody except for the five people
in the room.
It's the same YouTube videos that you watch, right? Exactly. And so the accessibility is kind of thing. Jay Electronica is he's a more accessible version of that. When he starts rapping about, kundalinis and stuff like that, I know what he's talking about, and I still get them. But Jay Electronica just pops up in places and blesses us with immaculate spit and then disappears again. Honestly, if I could be a rapper, I would want that kind of presence.
I'd rather Everybody be Black
knows
Thought.
You're the shit.
I'd rather be Black Thought.
Yeah. I mean, that's also acceptable.
Yeah, I think that somehow we've moved on to this topic, but if aging in rap means you have to go a certain path, I'd rather be Jay-Z. I was about to say I'd rather be Black Thought than Jay-Z, but that's just stupid. I'd rather have $1 billion. But Black Thought seems like he's very happy, and every so often he just pops up on some kid's track to remind everybody that, oh no, I'm better than 95% of these dudes.
Yeah. Well, and so he puts out, what was the name of his?
Stream of Thought.
Yeah, Stream of Thought. Yeah. So he's still got his channels to remind you that he's the dude who has immaculate freestyles on Funk Flex for 15 minutes in a row. He's still got all that. But then he can be the band leader on Jimmy Fallon. So I honestly, the more I think about, I mean, if I assume money is no object for either Black Thought or Jay-Z. No. Obviously. I would probably want the Black Thought suit.
Yeah.
Because it seems like he's doing more of what he wants. But again, I don't know. These are
one of the most frustrating conversations I've had in the last 5 years. A young classic American came to me and said, I said, I'm listening to the new Black Thought. Who's Black Thought? And I didn't want to say it, but you know how I had to relate it. And it really angered me. I said, he's on the Tonight Show. He's the guy who sings. She said, Tariq, don't you ever say his name.
No.
His name is Black Thought.
He's not Tariq to you. He is not Tariq to you.
And then she responded with, oh, he raps? I need you to get away from me. I need you to leave my presence. And I think that there's a generation of people who are very aware of who Black Thought are, who are unaware of who Black Thought is.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Well, and that's an interesting part about aging in rap, right? Like you have different eras. There's a whole generation of, like, not even kids, but people who have come to age as young adults who don't know Snoop as the dude who beat a murder truck.
No, I was just thinking that. He had a song called Murder Was the Case.
They only know him as dude who did a cooking show with Martha Stewart and is like a funny juxtaposition to this dainty lady.
Yeah, no. You know? Snoop has a charge. Yes. He beat that charge because he's famous. That's as far as I'll go.
If you don't know who Lil Halfdad is, then you don't know Snoop.
Snoop was not a his first song, to those who don't know Snoop, was a celebration of a day in Compton, and we'll leave it there. Actually, no, his first song was the one with Dre, Deep Cover.
Yeah.
Man, and that is not a general consumption type of song.
No. Not a family-friendly message.
No. That's Snoop. God bless him.
America is going to mourn. I shouldn't even speak this into existence, but America is going to mourn seriously when Snoop Dogg dies.
Yeah. I just love the way he just pops up in the most random places. Like, oh, that's Snoop. And he's just hanging out, you know, calling somebody nephew.
I need to adopt that into my vocabulary. No, actually, I couldn't do it convincingly. But I want to be called, at some point, if I had to make a wish, it would be for Snoop to sincerely refer to me as nephew. Exactly, man. Oh, Uncle Snoop. I'm just over here. Yeah,
exactly. One of my favorite stories from the 90s was when, like, the Crips had to ask Snoop to stop coming around because he was too famous. And he still just wanted to hang out in the hood. And he was like, yeah, we out here moving and you can't come around here anymore.
You're making it hot. Right. You're making it hot. Yeah.
And now he's just hanging out with Martha Stewart, and she has no idea why he's wearing blue all the time.
Why he twists up his fingers and wears dark blue. Yeah, exactly.
Oh, man. Snoop Dogg. Snoop Doggy Dogg for back in those who really want to. I mean, his first album cover is not for the faint at heart.
Exactly. Not family friendly material. That's okay. When did he make the? Because Ice Cube also had a transition from being one of America's most feared, right? America's most wanted, to borrow the outcome, to doing Are We There Yet? The movie
twice,
right? And that was a spectrum of the evolution of Ice Cube, right? And there's a spectrum of the evolution of Snoop Dogg, too. Once he started doing tracks with Pharrell, I think that's when he was like, oh, I mean,
Justin Timberlake showed up on that album. It was kind of, you know, Snoop got his pop card, and once you get the pop card, you're very protective of said pop card.
Yeah, man. Yeah, it's a money factory.
Hey, man. Speaking of money, we keep circling back to Kanye. If you think about it, he's winning. He's going to sell more shoes. He's going to sell, you know, he's going to get more production jobs. He'll ruin another Nas album at some point. I'm so glad Nas found Hit-Boy, by the way. Like, we're getting some classic Nas. And I used to have the feeling with Nas albums that I was listening to a guy who'd read, like, an Afrocentric book on, like, the gods and the earth, and he didn't read the whole book. He just read enough to, like, get the catchphrases, and then he put out an album, and people just bought in. And I used to be like, wait, where's his credentials? But now, like, with King's Disease 1 and 2, I'm like, you know what? I like old Nas. I like where he's at in his life.
That's Nas also raps about rich person problems because he's got them. But it's way more acceptable. Or I can relate the struggles that he's talking about to my own life, at my own scale, in a way. Mm. Like, and that's what, like, yeah, Nas is a author in the sense of, like, okay, he describes the story, like, on Illmatic, he's describing the stories that he's seeing in Queens, right? But he's describing stories that are more real than even just what happens in his actual life, because they're real for people in all sorts of different ways. Right. He's describing, like, you know, like universal themes, you know, things that happen in people's life, and he's convincing about it. Right. Yeah. I mean, and him linking with Hit-Boy, this is beautiful, dude. It's immaculate. Yeah. When the first King's Disease came out, I remember being struck at how much the sounds that Hit-Boy was making, like, suited where Nas was at. Everybody likes to give Nas shit. This is an internet trope that Nas is terrible at picking beats or something like that.
But he is, though. I mean, not all of them, but enough of them.
There's some picks that were questionable. There's some picks that are questionable. Like, no disrespect to Salam Remy or Chuck Passers. But rest in peace. But there was no beat that could be conceived by anybody as whack on King's Disease 1 or 2. There was nothing there that's like, I wonder why he did that. No, all of that was like, there was a style, right? And it's I don't want to say it's Hit-Boy, like, doing the Hit-Boy version of kind of New York style production, because it's not really. Right. It's something else, and that's exciting. That means that I'm not going to get tired of hearing the next Hit-Boy and Nas project, or even between King's Disease 1 and 2. I listen to those two, and I'm not like, oh, this is spillovers from one of these sessions, right?
You know? Yeah, I mean, it was like when Ye came, or not Ye, what was the name of the album Nas did with Kanye? Something. It was called Something. It was like 6 tracks long. We all only listened to it twice and never came back to it again. But Hit-Boy gave me the Ye album with Nas that I wanted. Because I wanted, like, soul samples and, like, you know, I wanted that early Rockefeller Kanye giving Nas, like, new life. And instead, I got whatever that album was.
The Nasir.
Yeah. To be fair, not a bad album. Just as is a pattern now, ever since Pablo, absolute mid.
Well, I think the problem with that, so that one came out right after Ye did Daytona.
And Kid C Ghost and Tiana Taylor's album. Like, there was that week of
when he was only releasing projects that had 7 tracks. Yeah. When 7 was the new wave, right? Yeah. Yeah, no, and like the beats on Daytona, for example, those were perfect.
But do you think that was actually Kanye producing it? There were a lot of people in Wyoming.
There was a lot.
And Push is not the dude that you're going to hand him straight mid and say, "Hey, Push."
Well, so Push, I think, told one story about this, that he had all of Daytona produced already and turned it into Kanye, and Kanye was like, "No, I think I could reproduce these better." And so which by the way sounds completely plausible.
Yeah, no, like, it sounds exactly like what happened.
I'm sure that that's basically what happened. Yeah, and so, yeah, I do wonder whether or not Kanye did all of that.
I've heard something similar about Nas's album, that Nas's album was mostly, like, ready to go, and Kanye, like, flipped it, and we got Nasir as it is, you know, and lives in the Spotify memory banks.
The thing, so, you know, Mike Dean, the producer. So
he's all over this new album, too.
Right, exactly. He's been all over all of those, and I'm not pointing that out to you, like, "Oh, Mike Dean, you fucked all this up." But because Mike Dean has a genius here. But like on Nasir, like, that was a resource that Kanye was drawing. Yeah. Sure.
I will tell you, though, if, take a look at the credits to this Donda album and then match up the producers with the songs you like, and you'll notice something startling. They're all producers with enough, I hate this word, but enough clout to say, no, you will cut this song down to 3 minutes and 40 seconds. You will not add a 15th drum loop to this section because it doesn't need it. The songs that have kind of gone like so far out of the like realm of listenability are the ones where there isn't somebody who like might not, I don't want to denigrate Mike Dean. We keep saying his name, but
yeah,
you know, he clearly is not telling Ye, hey, doesn't need to be 6 minutes of you chanting your mom's name.
Yeah, bro.
Yeah. I mean, respect to her. Rest in peace.
Absolutely.
The Donda chant was a little, I mean, self-indulgent is the word I'll use. Self-indulgent.
I mean, is self-indulgent certainly in the context of, like, if you are expecting a Kanye West musical project and you hear that, you're like, what is going on? But Kanye's thinking about it in the...
He lost his mom.
He thinks of himself in the... He lost his mom, but he also thinks about himself in the lineage of artists like Steve Reich and people who are like, you know, who are playing with the parameters of what music is and asking those kind of questions. But like... And he tries to... And again, Kanye is a brave... creative figure for this, but he tries to put that stuff in like a pop context, like not like, you know, bubblegum pop sort of stuff, but like popular music that is popularly consumed, mm-hmm. not by like specialists, by like casual listeners. They're not going to go for that.
So I think we're going to walk out of the Kanye conversation saying something good about him. So I'll ask you this: favorite Kanye album, favorite Kanye song.
Favorite Kanye album is Graduation. And like maybe not his best, but definitely in the top three, right? Definitely a top three one. But my favorite because it came out like right as I was finishing high school and there was just like, there was an energy around, like when Good Life came out, dude, oh my.
Well, forever we played at cookouts. Forever.
Absolutely, bro. Absolutely. And yeah, and that was like as T-Pain was also on his ascendancy too. So my favorite Kanye song is probably Family Business.
Okay. I can see that.
That to me represents what Kanye brought to the game that was unique and exciting and interesting for people at the time. It was like, oh, this is like a beat that's, you know, it's got drums that sound like 90s drums, beefier a little bit. It's got like some kind of chops going on there. But then he's also got like, he's rapping about positive, like real life uplifting stuff, family struggles, family situations. But then he's also got these beautiful, beautiful like gospel melodies in there. And like that to me is emblematic of like the genius of the Kanye form, right? Or the Kanye recipe, I should say.
So my favorite album is also The Graduation. I think it's the most accessible of his albums. So if I had to say to a person, like, here's Kanye West, Graduation probably, it's not as sonically rich as what will come next, which is My Beautiful Dark Twisted Fantasy, and not as experimental as, like, Yeezus, which honestly is almost experimental to the point of unlistenable at points. Life of Pablo, when it felt like he was like hitting the curve a little too hard, and you could just see that, you know, it wasn't going to get better than this. I hope that I'm wrong. I hope that I'm wrong that Life of Pablo was our higher point, but it very well may be the last time we've had a very coherent Kanye.
Real Friends is a serious contender for like one of my favorite songs too.
Well, my favorite song is All of the Lights, and I have a hard time choosing one, but the production on All of the Lights is to me the best he's ever done, because there's just so much there, so many layers to it. Also Runaway on if you ever get a chance to look at the genius breakdown of Runaway and all of the different things that like he put together for a 10-second throwaway of that song is truly phenomenal. But I think Graduation's his best album. I think the best work he did was either on Pablo or Twisted Dark Fantasy.
Yeah, yeah. Though My Beautiful Dark Twisted Fantasy had the most, I think the height of the complexity of this production, for sure. Like, the most sophisticated productions there, like, that actually worked. Like, not, there was some stuff on Yeezus that was like, that's crazy that you're doing. Yeah. Also, he was starting to listen to, hanging out with that guy, Gesaffelstein.
Yeah. Yeah,
yeah, the German, and it's like, this sounds like it should be played in a club.
Like
in
Berlin. Yeah, I was gonna say, like a German death metal club.
Exactly. Yeah. And, like, I'm not wearing enough, you know, shiny black
or blood. You're not wearing enough blood for that place.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Shout out to Wesley Snipes. Yeah.
Okay, so let's do. You mentioned them. In addition to new music, let's do T-Pain next time, because I've got a whole, like, T-Pain, and he's come back up recently because apparently Usher tried to destroy his mental state at some point.
Yeah.
Which, yeah, screw you, Usher. That wasn't cool.
Did you watch the Drink Champs interview?
No, I didn't.
T-Pain? You should watch it. He speaks on it a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, don't destroy another man's, like, mental state because you're upset that you can't get a hit. That's not his fault.
It's not.
Also, Jay tried to do it too, and T-Pain kept it going. I mean, God bless T-Pain, and he's a good watch if you ever want to catch his Nappy Boy Radio.
Yeah, no, T-Pain seems like a real normal dude. Yeah. Like, he likes to make his music, and all the other stuff he kind of, like, wishes he didn't have.
The only thing he ever did to piss me off was I didn't know he could sing that well.
That's that NPR Tiny Desk concert that it did.
Eye-opening.
Yeah, that was eye-opening.
Yeah. If you haven't seen it, and I don't know why you haven't, like, realized that T-Pain can actually really sing, you should go ahead and watch the NPR Tiny Desk. Just watch them in general, because you'll find some great music on there, too.
True.
I was just watching Wale's Tiny Desk last night, and Wale can come across aloof sometimes. Aloof is the word we'll use. And you can see, like, at the beginning of the Tiny Desk, he seems very aloof, but by the end, he's like, you know, he's really into it. So that's our DC music plug for the pod. You got
Rare Essence.
Yeah.
Rare Essence also has a Tiny Desk.
You got any albums for the people to listen to?
So this is an older one, older as in it was released last year. Listen to me, but he just released a single from an upcoming album, so I'm reminded of this. I've told you about this dude, JPEG Mafia.
Yeah,
JPEG Mafia is a very, very unique voice in hip hop to me. You know, he does, like, some auto tune sing, but then he also raps like Ice Cube. But he's a producer rapper. Combination guy. His beats sound nothing like anything I've heard anybody else produce. Even if you don't end up liking the songs, you're gonna appreciate the freshness of it. So I forgot what the name of the one that was released, but it's the most recent thing that he has. If you go on Spotify or whatever, check out JPEG Mafia.
For me, I've got the Stevie song that's been stuck in my head for the last 2 months. I call it his sneaky hit from, like, 84 or something, when none of us were paying attention to music. I was just trying to, you know, find a hole to stick my thumb in, which sounds weird now that it's left my head, but let's just move past that.
It's a good song.
Love, Light, and Flight from the Woman in Red soundtrack, or Woman in a Red Dress soundtrack. I don't know the name of the soundtrack, but Love, Light, and Flight has been stuck in my head and has been played in my car an abnormal amount of times. I'm sure it's going to be one of those things where Spotify says, this is your most listened to track this year, but if you want to hear, like, perfect 80s Stevie, he's got his synths going. It's like the death, is around that time period, the death of, like, live musicians in the studio, and Stevie's still kind of holding on while also moving into, like, the very electronic sound of 80s R&B pop. Great song. Just a great song.
Stevie also has never missed in his life. So.
No. Well, no, he hasn't. I was about to say, like, some of the stuff he did in the 90s, but I probably just wasn't ready.
No, we had to catch up to him.
Right.
He wrote my favorite country song of all time on Hotter Than July. I don't like country music, so I'm a little...
Man. Hotter Than July, you know, hot take, my favorite Stevie album. Easily.
No, I'm with you on that.
People say Inner Visions or Songs in the Key in Life. I don't know. They don't touch me. Hotter in July, though, that's my jam.
You make my soul up.
How can you not like that song?
That song is cool. Also, Wale sampled that in one of the early songs. I don't remember which one it was. But yeah.
You'll find that we are going to stand for as many DC artists as we can because DC doesn't get enough recognition. We're even going to claim some of the ones we shouldn't because you know what? Screw you guys.
Exactly. IDK? Yeah, exactly.
Go shout out to Gold Link, who has a recent single too with Dej Loaf. I think it was Dej Loaf.
Oh, true. Yeah. Gold Link is super talented, man. Yeah, that album that the I don't remember what it was, the one with Crew on it and Kokomo Freestyle and all that. Yeah. That album was a classic when it was released. I listened.
All right, well, it looks like we lost Sam, so we're going to go ahead and dump out. But make sure you check out future episodes of View from the Stoop. Morgan will be back with us next week. We've got some more great interviews coming up. Dr. Bernadette's coming back to be with us as well. So check us out at BrownstoneMG. You can find us on all of the major podcast platforms, Audible, YouTube. You can check out the Brownstone Media Group Top 10 Plus 2 on Spotify. We're also going to get Sam to start putting up his own playlist. So please check us out. Let us know how we're doing. Leave comments. Give us constructive criticism. Until next time, family. One.